Burn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. You know, we have the same kind of a day today that we had yesterday. And it's a real fooler. I mean, it's pretty if you look outside. You know, you're looking out your window or whatever. Lots of sunshine, lots of blue sky. And then you step outside and, woof, it is cold again. And here we are right now, noon hour, 35 degrees. And it's not going to get a whole lot warmer. A little blustery, too, just like yesterday. So when are we going to get the spring temperatures? Probably the beginning of next week. It's going to feel a little bit warmer. Good show today. We have a lot of guests. We'll meet our first guest in just a moment. A little bit later on the program, about a half an hour or so, we'll be chatting with Robert Forte. He's a screenwriter for some time out in California. He's now moved to Johnstown, so he's a western Pennsylvania guy now. And he's become a novelist. Interesting career. Screenwriting. We'll talk with Robert Forte. Also, a little bit about exercise, particularly those of you, us, me, who try to cram exercise into the weekend. There's good news and bad news about that. We'll talk with Dr. Ken Redcross about that. And then our final guest today, Stephen Hupp, as we talk about some of the myths of child development. Pretty interesting stuff there. That's all to come later. Our first guest is Butler City Councilman Kenny Bonas. He's here in the studio with us today. Councilman, good to see you again, as always.
Good to see you as well. Thanks for having me today.
This is our regular edition of City Hall, which we have pretty much every month, with the rare exceptions here on the It's Your Turn program. And it's a chance to bring not only residents of the city of Butler, but others too, up to date on what's happening in the city. Because Councilman, I've always felt, even when I didn't live in the city of Butler, that it didn't matter where you live in the region, Butler's kind of the center of operations. It's the county seat.
Definitely.
A lot of professional offices. A lot of folks come to Butler for doctors or dentists or other professional help. And so everybody's interested in what's going on in the city of Butler.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting times, and being the county seat like that and being the place of business, everybody passes through Butler and does a lot of work in Butler. So what happens here is pretty important for the county.
You're settling into your first full term as a member of city council, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
You did have experience before, though.
I didn't have experience before being appointed. And
Oh, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
You served a brief time following an appointment to the
yep.
city, but you won election last fall.
Yep, sir. Won the election in the fall, but it was a learning curve in that first term being appointed and kind of finding a rhythm with it now, so it's really exciting.
Well, Butler City Council met last night. Actually, you met twice this week. You have an agenda-setting session on what, Tuesdays?
On Tuesday evening, so at 6:30. We always make those open to the public, and then on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. we have our actual meeting.
Most governmental bodies these days certainly in larger counties and cities do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply to keep the regular public meeting as brief as possible. I mean, otherwise it could run, you know, 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, that's correct. And the transparency of what's going to be on the agenda on Thursday in order to allow people to process that information and determine whether or not it's appropriate to come to council on the main meeting.
It's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. I first heard about it when Allegheny County used to do it, and they would take care of all of their resolutions and proclamations at the agenda-setting meeting, and there were many.
Yeah.
So, regular session last night, among the items of business, a city police officer who had been fired on a split vote of city council early last year has been reinstated, and council approved a settlement with Sergeant Mayhew.
Yep, a lot of that discussion occurs during executive session, so mm-hmm. can't go into
personnel matter
too far, but yeah, the arbitrator had determined that he should get his job back, and We just followed the determination of the arbitrator.
Mm-hmm. So Sergeant is back on the force?
That's correct.
The city police force is now at full strength, at least as budgeted, is that right?
From my understanding, yeah. Ben, in particular, is in charge of the police department, but from my understanding, it is.
Speaking of Mayor Ben Smith, of course.
Yep.
Your particular responsibilities on every member of council has a responsibility in a particular area, and you're kind of a liaison. You can report back to other council members about your particular area, and you're involved with the street department.
That is correct. Yep, the streets department. I have a team of five guys. Tom Schuler is in charge of the streets team, and it's those five gentlemen that do all the snow plowing, the cleanup, the leaf vacuuming throughout the year, and a lot of other tasks that go unnoticed at times, but they're behind the scenes making sure things function on the streets.
Tom's the foreman, but he's a working foreman, right? He's out there plowing along with everyone else.
That's correct, yeah. He's out there with the guys doing overtime when it starts snowing in the late hours of the evening. They're out there plowing the streets.
Well, they had some of that work this week, just a few days ago, when we had hopefully our last big winter snowstorm. We'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Do you have any, I don't want any specific numbers, but ballpark figure in terms of supplies and overtime? It was a strange winter.
Mm-hmm.
February was incredibly warm. We had several days in the 60s. We had one day, it was actually in the 70s in the middle of February.
Yeah, something.
And then come March, and it got cold and wintry again, and we've had a couple of our biggest snowstorms in March over the past two, 3 weeks, one of them just a few days ago.
Yep.
So when you put all that together, does it turn out to be a fairly normal winter in terms of overtime, or are we within the budgeted amount for overtime for snow plowing and stuff?
I think that we are. I know that a considerable amount of their time is spent salting the roads, plowing the roads, working on things like that. But in February, when we did get those nice days, the team got out there and they did some cold patching where they put patches on the streets where potholes may come up because of plow trucks going through, and also repairing brick roads. In February, they actually spent 60% of their time helping to repair some of those roads, so really adapting to the weather and what happened to the roads to be able to try to make those roads more drivable for everybody.
Yeah, that was one of the bad points about that big warm-up in February, because it was very cold in January, bitterly cold,
mm-hmm.
the warm-up, and then it got cold again, and that freeze-thaw cycle just wreaks havoc on roadways. You get potholes that can develop almost instant, big ones almost instantly.
It really does, and notable ones are even on Main Street. That road particularly is maintained by PennDOT, so our streets team isn't necessarily in charge of that, but PennDOT is the one that has to get to those, patch it up, because mm-hmm. you could almost start to see some of the brick underneath Main Street start to show up at some points.
Which is very sad, because that whole area was just repaved within the last year and a half.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of those potholes, and I said, what's going on here?
That's what I was thinking myself, too.
Yeah.
It's a little frustrating.
And there's one particular place, and I don't mean to pick on PennDOT here, because I think generally they do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
But near the bottom of North Main Street Hill, before they repaved it a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
It was deteriorating just north of the traffic signal at Main and Penn.
That's right.
And it was really getting bad. They put some temporary patches in there and so on and so forth. And then when they repaved it, apparently they didn't fix the problem, because the road, it's like caving in there again.
It's starting to resurface. I find myself trying to avoid those potholes on a daily basis.
You see people zigzagging, it doesn't matter whether they're coming down North Main Street Hill or going up. It's a very dangerous situation. I can't imagine that they didn't realize that there was a problem somewhere. I don't know whether it's a caved-in pipe or something, but there's something wrong under that section of Main Street.
Yeah, it definitely presents a problem, and I think it's one of those things that we'll be communicating with PennDOT to see if we can address some of the underlying issues, because it seems to continue to resurface. So,
if you're concerned about that, folks, and if you mutter under your breath, as I do, going up or coming down North Main Street Hill. Keep in mind, that's a state highway, Route 8, so even though it's Main Street in the city of Butler, it's maintained by PennDOT, and I'm hoping that they'll take a look at that before too much longer.
Yeah, with the nice weather coming up here, hopefully soon, I think there will be a lot of different streets receiving special attention. I know that we as a city have designated significant amount of funds this year to repaving various streets. We work together with the Redevelopment Authority, who also has various funds available to certain neighborhoods to be able to repave streets too. So I think we're coming at it with a good approach this year to try to coordinate with the various entities that have funding available so that we're addressing the problem streets that are happening and kind of going through a cycle so that all the streets don't get bad all at once.
I had that on my notepad here to ask you about. Will some point in the next month or so, maybe next couple of months, will you be announcing which streets are scheduled for major work?
Yeah, we will be. We've been working together with our engineering team and the streets team to be able to put together a list that's determined to be the most in need of receiving pavement or paving, and then also resurfacing some of the brick streets as well. Those are good roads. They have a historic aspect to them, and we're going to try to adjust those bricks and repair those. Noteworthy, some of the time in February was actually spent repairing some of those brick roads and making sure that they drove smoothly.
That's a labor-intensive job because many of those brick streets were put in, decades ago, some of them during the Works Progress Administration, the WPA, whenever the federal government was putting guys to work just for the sake of putting them to work. It's very, very labor-intensive. They tend to last a long time, but I have noticed because most of the streets in the core of the city of Butler were brick. Many of them have been paved over. But I've noticed where there are still brick streets, they tend to sink every once in a while. You get these low spots, and then sooner or later that develops into a little bit of a hump there, and it's kind of rocky when you drive over them.
Yeah, the only benefit to those becoming of that condition would be that people slow down a little bit, especially in neighborhoods where kids are playing. So that's really one of the only silver linings to that, but that tends to need it addressed and maintained. So we try to commit a little bit of financial resources towards making sure that those brick streets are improved appropriately.
I know there's a historic aspect to them, as you mentioned, and I'm trying to remember the circumstances. It was up around Diamond Park. Within the last 5 or 10 years, there was some work done for some reason or another, and it was specified that those are brick streets, that they be repaired and replaced as they were. And a lot of workers, because you gotta lay down a sand base and then you just put these bricks in one by one by one.
Yeah, special bricks too, I think.
yeah, it's not just your standard brick. So a lot of work there, but worth it, and hopefully the ones that remain, people will smile a little bit and say, ah, yes, that's the way it used to be.
We'll hope.
Way back when.
Yep.
There's one place, it's in the Institute Hill area, and I did not see this myself. Someone pointed it out to me. Oh, I know where it is. It's on East Pearl Street. When you start up the steepest hill on East Pearl, it's uphill all the way, but you start up the big hill toward the top of Institute Hill. That's brick.
Oh, yeah.
And someone said, you can see the old trolley tracks there. And I said, really? The tracks aren't there anymore. But when they took the tracks out from the trolley, they just put the bricks in a straight line. Everywhere else, they're staggered. And you can see where the trolley lines ran in the middle of that street.
Yeah. Bit of history right there showing itself.
Indeed. Kenny Bonus is with us. He is a member of Butler City Council, and we're talking about some of the things that transpired at Butler City Council meeting last night. John Pro was on hand from the Butler Antique Automobile Association. They've been working on the city-owned Jeep for the last couple of months. I guess the news is good. Huh?
Yeah, it is. he told the story that both the mayor and some of the gentlemen from the police force actually took a ride around the Jeep around the city on one of the nicer days, and they said that it was driving real great, and they got to wave and smile to a lot of people. They were getting thumbs up along the way, but it's good to know that that's in operation. It's a treasure to our community. It's a historic treasure right there, and I think that would have been something to be riding in a Jeep through Butler the other day.
Yeah, that would be an attention getter, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And it will be this summer. I understand the city's Jeep is already registered to participate in the Bantam Jeep Heritage Festival this
summer. That's right, yeah. Yeah, John also explained that there was a list of various events that they'll be taking the Jeep to, showcasing it, and it's a great way to get the history of Butler out there in front of people and make people realize that, hey, we were the creators of the Jeep.
Do you know anything, and you may not, because, number one, you're not old enough, nor am I, to remember the details about this, and you weren't on city council, but this Jeep somehow came into the being the property of the city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it was donated or what happened there, but it was one of the Jeeps made here in Butler, one of the original ones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know too much of the backstory. I know there are some people
either,
that do, but yeah.
Well, at any rate, it's nice to get it fixed up. I guess it needed quite a bit of work, mainly minor stuff, but it took a lot of person hours on the part of the members of the Antique Automobile Club to get it going again.
Yeah, I think they were saying something around the hours of 90, supposedly. So they've been putting some hard work into that, and I'm sure it's really rewarding for their group as well to be able to work on such a historic treasure.
A little bit more than a lube and an oil change, but it's obviously working well now. Well, we'll look for that one.
Yeah.
Come summer.
Definitely.
Whenever we have the Jeep Festival downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Bonas visiting with us. You had quite a few items on your agenda last night when it came your turn at Butler City Council. What else were you dealing with last night?
Yeah. It was a pretty good evening. We talked a little bit about the Foodie Fridays that'll be going on in downtown Butler for this summer.
Now that's moving to a slightly different location, isn't it?
Foodie Fridays is still going to be happening in that People's Gas parking lot area over there in that the city parking lot. That's going to be in conjunction with Butler downtown having various concert evenings too. So,
That's where I was confused. Yeah. The concert venue is going to be in the North Main Street parking lot.
That's right, yeah.
Foodie Fridays will still be in the Phillips TWP parking lot, which is right next door, by the way.
Yes. So that should be a really exciting time to bring people into Butler, different food trucks, music going on, things for kids to do. Just overall, good time in the summer.
These were a surprise hit last year. It was the first time they tried them.
Oh, yeah. People went there, they ate, and then they walked down Main Street and did a little bit of shopping. It was really something to bring people out.
And as I recall, the Butler Downtown Group was involved in getting this organized, and they were, you know, who knew whether it was going to go or not. And even the first one, it was a rainy day, and yet huge crowds.
Oh, yeah.
People loved it.
And I think primarily it was a group of business owners that coordinated together, and they brought an idea to creation and really did an amazing job, something that's really valuable to the city, just bringing people together and celebrating some good food.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I'm glad you straightened me out, because I was confused on that. It's the concert venue that's going to be at the North Main Street parking lot.
That's right, yep. And then a couple other items that were mentioned. The Butler Downtown Beer Fest will be going on June 30th up on the top of the Tier Center City parking garage.
That was another thing that debuted last year and was a smash hit, too.
It was a huge success. There was a lot of people up there, and it gives people who are traveling from out of town a little bit of a better perception of the city. They show a city that's being progressive, holding events, being cultured, and really celebrating the revival of the city.
And the date for that is going to be what?
June 30th in the summer, so it should be a really good event.
Yeah, you don't really feel like enjoying a sample of beer in January.
No.
Kind of a summer thing, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you're on the top deck of the Tier Garage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then during the meeting, we also talked about purchasing a dump truck from the Butler Township. We've been working in conjunction with Butler Township on various projects, and most notably, our streets departments are communicating back and forth together to see how we both can work together in order to provide benefits to our residents. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be nice to purchase one of their used dump trucks off them, save taxpayers and money, and it's in relatively good condition with a plow and salt spreader and a trailer. So we feel that we were on the receiving end of a nice benefit right there.
The vehicles that are used in the wintertime for both plowing and for spreading of salt, they take a lot of abuse.
Absolutely. I mean,
folks, you know how it is when you get salt spray on your car. You like to get it cleaned off as quickly as you can. Well, if you're driving a truck that's spreading salt, you can imagine the damage that can happen in just a couple of years, really.
Yeah, they go through a lot more wear and tear than regular vehicles do.
That's for sure.
Yep. Yeah. And then we talked a little bit about encouraging business owners on Main Street and other various parts of the city to take pride in their storefronts and their sidewalks on Main Street specifically. We got the comment that we were seeing a little bit of garbage and trash on people's front sidewalks, and we really felt like it's important to encourage business owners and their employees to clean up this sidewalk right in front, pick up trash if they might see it. It comes as a respectful request, but when people come into town and they see clean sidewalks, I think that's something that stands out, and nobody wants to see litter all over the sidewalk. And even pedestrians, if you see a little bit of garbage, maybe just pick it up. But it's taking pride in the community, and we take pride in the community, and we hope that our business owners would as well.
That's right. Visitors, first impression, very important.
Absolutely.
Very important.
And then we're also starting back up the Neighborhood Pride Awards to award residents and businesses who improve their properties. We want it to be known that, hey, we take note that people are trying to better their neighborhoods through the improvement of their own property, the facade of their building. So anybody who's ever noticing somebody who really did a good job with either their house or their business, we look for those nominations. And people can visit the city's website at cityofbutler.org to be able to pick up a nomination form to nominate somebody they think is deserving of it.
You know, I don't think I knew the city's website.
Yeah.
cityofbutler.org.
That's correct.
I have to mark that down.
Yeah.
I mean, you can Google stuff these days, but it's still good to know.
Yeah. One of the things about that Neighborhood Pride Award is that the overall idea is that we're trying to improve our community and reward people and show them that we notice that they're trying to improve their neighborhoods too. So we feel like taking a little bit of pride like that really goes a long way, and nearby neighbors tend to clean up their properties as well.
I see that council approved the use of the Diamond Street parking lot by the YMCA, which is taking over operation of the Butler Road Race.
Yeah.
And that's going to be pretty much the same time as it's always been, toward the end of June.
Yep. So that's exciting, too. It's always nice to be able to work together with these groups doing some really great things for the community. So being able to offer that area to the YMCA for the Butler Road Race is something that we're excited about.
There was one item last night on the agenda that I wasn't quite sure I understood, Councilman Kenny Bonas, and that was first reading of an ordinance here in the city amending the city's traffic control schedules.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that's all about? Can you explain it to us laypersons?
John Evans can usually do a better job of this, but the traffic control signals have undergone timing and syncing in order to make a flow through. So if you were to drive through the city, to make that more streamlined, so you weren't hitting every red light on the way through. So it's a little bit more of syncing the stoplights up to make sure that there's not too much congestion of traffic throughout the area. Mm-hmm. So this would have been the voting on changing the syncing of the traffic controls.
Many of the city-operated traffic signals as opposed to the ones that are operated by PennDOT.
Yeah, that's correct.
Main Street, for example. In fact, they're going to be working, I think, to sync theirs, too, a little bit better than they are right now.
Yeah, I think everybody's working on that continual improvement because as more and more people travel through our city, I think we need to make sure that they're not waiting at stoplights the whole time, that things are working smoothly and we're not getting too much congestion.
Councilman Kenny Bonas visiting with us today. I'm trying to think of some intersections that are it's city streets as opposed to a state highway because not only do we have Route 8, Main Street, that's a state highway, but 356 goes through the city, and that's a state maintained highway as well. Yeah, and so does Route 68.
Yeah, a lot of them flow right through the city, so thankful that PennDOT can kind of take ownership on a lot of those projects.
Can you imagine what it was like? I was on the, I still refer to it as the 422 bypass. I was on there just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I was shocked at how many vehicles were using it, both directions. And I thought, wow, can you imagine what it must have been like before this bypass was built? Because at that time, Route 422 went right through downtown Butler as well.
Oh, yeah, wow.
In addition to 68, 356, and Route 8. I have no memories of that, and I know you don't either, but... Man, oh man, can you imagine if all the traffic that's on the bypass now was going through the city? It would be a nightmare.
It would have been. I know that I looked at some studies that Butler Downtown has, and we have approximately 16,000 cars come through our main street on a daily basis. So you could imagine it would be a lot more than 16,000.
Yeah. I don't know the exact year that the Route 422 bypass opened up, but I know it was in the 60s somewhere, mid-60s, I believe. It's hard to imagine
that. Oh, I know.
422 running through downtown Butler still like it used to be. Wow. Any bonus visiting with us here today? Do you have any idea when you're going to be releasing the street names that are going to be worked on this summer?
I think that should be coming at least by the next council meeting. We'll do a report at the next council meeting of which ones we'll be paving, and then we'll try to get a list off of the redevelopment authority so that we'd have something more concise. And just a note, we try to work together with the utility companies. You might notice that they tend to dig up the streets, so we like to make sure we don't pave them and then have them immediately after dig up the streets. So we try to work together on those.
There are a few spots where those initial patches are a little bit rough and humped up. I know the city has an ordinance that utility companies have to make repairs so that the street is just like it was before they had to dig it up to fix a water leak or a gas line leak. But I've learned from past experience that immediately after they dig a hole and fix the water leak or the gas line, they fill it in and they put kind of a temporary patch in because they know it's going to settle. It always does.
That's right.
And then they'll come back later and cut that temporary patch out and put a new one in. And those always seem to be excellent.
Yeah.
Once they've done that.
That's right.
Now, the temporary ones are... rough. I drive over a couple of them every
likewise
day.
Yep.
But once it warms up a little bit, they'll be fixing those.
Yeah, that's the challenge right now. The roads might not be the best right now, but as the weather gets better and the asphalt companies get up and running, that's whenever we can really start making these improvements. So we definitely thank everybody for their patience with the roads conditions and hope that they can understand.
Well, I drive through the city every day, and I know that the city streets department has already been busy patching potholes, particularly some of the more egregious ones.
Yeah.
Now they have to use what to call cold patch this time of year because you don't have any hot asphalt.
That's right.
And the cold patch, that's another one of those kind of temporary things. I mean, you do the best you can until the weather warms up.
Yeah, it's like a latex compound, I believe. I don't know too much about the technicality of it all, but they were doing it over on Lincoln and ended up on the front page of the newspaper the one day when we had a warm spell. So we're trying to get to it, and whenever the weather breaks, try to get in there and improve where we can.
And again, once it warms up, there'll be more permanent patches made.
That's right.
A couple of weeks ago, I don't know, it was just a route that I took through the city or what, but I was dodging potholes here and there, and also out on the main highways, too, on mm-hmm. the state road. This is one of the worst years for potholes that I can remember.
Yeah, it has to have something to do with just that extreme cold and then warming up, like you had mentioned, too. And just
warming up for like 3 weeks in February yeah. and then getting bitterly cold again.
Yeah, I thought it was going to stay spring.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. Well, we put up with it for a little bit longer, and then hopefully we'll get that taken care of.
Yeah, definitely.
Anything else that happened of interest at last night's meeting that we should talk about?
Nothing that's coming to mind, but it is exciting to be working together with this council. I'm not sure if any of my colleagues have come onto these radio shows and had mentioned it, but I feel as though everybody's working together. There's three of us that are under the age of 40 on city council right now. So it's just showing that there are individuals who really care about the future of the city, and we're really trying to make the best things happen. It can't happen overnight, but we feel that just perseverance and patience, it gets you to where you want to go, and it's just really nice to be surrounded by a lot of educated gentlemen that are able to articulate their ideas and at times, sometimes agree to disagree, but really trying to do what's best for the city and do the right diligence and research.
This is only March, so we've had a limited number of city halls so far, but we have talked with the Mayor Ben Smith. Councilman Mike Walter was with us as well, and we'll get to everybody eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that Jeff has been diligently working in his position as councilman and applying for various grants in relation to the parks within the city.
I remember from Tuesday night's meeting that Councilman Jeff Smith said he's going to try to scour up some funding to repair the skate park at Father Manera Park. I guess it's fallen into disrepair.
Yeah, that's right. He met with the group that helps to maintain some of the skate park, or that has an interest in the skate park, last night after the meeting. So it was good to see that people are passionate about these projects and really want to champion them and try to make things better like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be talking to him before too much longer. He's been busy. He was chair, I think, of the Presidential Search Committee at Slippery Rock University, so he's been busy with that. And, of course, they've named a new permanent president now within the past week or so.
Yep.
Councilman Kenny Bonus visiting with us today. Councilman, I appreciate you taking time out of your work day. I know this happens to be a particularly busy time of the year for you.
Yeah, it definitely is. I've been preparing taxes pretty much 100 hours a week, but I think that it's important to get on the radio and let people know how things are going in the city.
This is not the best time to ask an accountant if he has any spare time, because from now, over the next 3 weeks or so, you're going to be a busy guy.
Yeah, it's all about prioritizing, and the city is definitely a key priority, and as are my clients, so I think that it's about a balancing and making sure you're doing the right stuff.
Councilman Kenny Bonus visiting with us today. Good to see you, Councilman. Thanks
Good
for stopping
Good to see you,
in.
Too. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
More to come on It's Your Turn. Hope you can stay with us, because coming up in just a moment, we're going to be chatting with Robert Forte. He's an interesting guy. He had a long career as a screenwriter and a scriptwriter in California, in Hollywood. So that's an interesting career. We'll talk to him about that. He has now moved to Johnstown, so he's become a Pennsylvania guy, and he's also become a novelist. So we'll talk about that with him coming up here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Great opportunity, listeners, to talk to an author, a filmmaker with some local connections. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're looking forward to a nice chat with Robert Forte. Robert, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us here on the program today.
Nice to meet you too, Dave.
You have been, 20 years a filmmaker, and now you've turned to writing. You got a couple of novels coming out here.
Yes, I do. The Woman in the Yellow Dress and Magenta Dairy. They're both available on Amazon.com.
Now, as I understand it from your publicist, these are the first two novels in what will eventually be a trilogy. Is that correct, Robert?
Yes, I'm writing the third book now as we speak, Dave. It's called the War of Ghosts.
Mm-hmm. And all three of the books feature the same character, Private Detective Patrick Miles Atwater.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in just a second here, because exciting. I'm anxious to see the woman in the yellow dress. First, though, I want to talk a little bit about your career. You've been acclaimed for your stage productions in Los Angeles, as well as a recent screenplay optioned by Universal Studios. What's that screenplay, Robert?
It's a Western called Hard Ride. It's probably going to sit on that shelf till we're very old as we speak. These things take forever, and sometimes they just say, hey, you know what, we're just going to pass on this one. So I don't really have any big hopes for it, but, you know, I did sell it, and I'm happy I did. I've written over 30 screenplays, and I produced four of my stage plays. But L.A. is not the place to put, you know, plays up. You got to put them up in New York. That's where the plays all are.
Mm-hmm. You live in Los Angeles now, do you, Robert?
I did for almost 30 years, but I moved back to Pennsylvania. I live in Johnstown right now. My wife used to live here for about 20 years, so when she came out to California to see me, we have 5 grandchildren here in town, so we came back here to be with the kids.
Well, that's interesting because one of your scripts, The Boss's Club, is actually based on a book of the same name that talks about a true story from Johnstown, huh? Way back when?
Yeah, I met Richard Gregory. He's the man who wrote the book. He helped me actually with the putting my two books together. We became good friends, and when I read The Boss's Club, I said, Richard, this will make a great movie. Let me turn it into a screenplay for you. And so we struck up a deal together, and I wrote the screenplay. It's about the flood of 1889, and Richard really tells the true story of, you know, why it happened, how it happened. And I thought it would make a, right now, today, too, it would make a great film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a tragic story, the Johnstown flood. But the flood itself, great loss of life and tremendous financial losses. But it prompted the need for the incline plane in Johnstown.
Yes, it did. Well, when I came to Johnstown, I saw the incline plane and I thought, gee, that looks like something to be fun to drive. And being that I was new here in Johnstown, I thought, well, let me see if I can be an operator up there, and then plus it will give me an opportunity to meet the people of Johnstown. And that's exactly what happened. I worked there for the last 3 years, just retired this year.
So for folks who aren't familiar with it, and I would be included in that category, what is the incline plane anyway?
It's a train car that just goes up and down. It's the steepest one in the world, actually, because it's a vehicular. They can put a car on it, and not too many can do that today. But back in the day, that was the only way they got up and down the hill really fast.
So this would be similar to, there's a couple of them in Pittsburgh that go up Mount Washington, the Monongahela Incline, for example. This is a similar thing?
Yes, it's just like that, only it's bigger and it's steeper.
You also wrote a pilot for a TV show that I guess it takes place on the Incline Plain or thereabouts?
Yeah, working with the people there, we have a lot of fun. And I thought, you know what, this would be a good sitcom if I, you know, kind of took everybody, a little bit of everybody, and then, of course, exaggerated it very much and made it a comedy. And also, it might bring more tourists in to ride the Incline Plain if we had a TV show called The Inclined.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, because Johnstown has been hard hit financially with the loss of heavy industry, as so many communities have here in western Pennsylvania. So
when it's true, but sadly, I think it's everywhere in the country, Dave. I don't think it's just here in Johnstown. You know, it's everybody needs a little help up for sure.
So I'm interested to talk with somebody who's a scriptwriter, screenwriter. It appears
Let me
that
guess, you have an idea for a movie, right?
Well, I don't actually, but I'm just interested in the procedure. It seems like you have to have quite a few irons in the fire at the same time, and you just never know when one is going to come to fruition. It might be very soon. It might be years down the road, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, you wait for that call for Spielberg to give you the ring and say, hey, I need you to write this for me, and I need it in 3 weeks, and he sends a check. You know, that would be most wonderful, but it just doesn't work that way. Writing is its own reward as far as I'm concerned, and you write something and you hope somebody gets enough interest to get it done and get it made. But it's a process that you start with fade in and you end with fade out, but you have a lot of fun in the process. If you're not having a fun doing it, then you shouldn't be doing it at all, and I have a lot of fun writing.
Well, there's a talent for it because, first of all, what you have to do is reduce a great deal. I mean, you know, in a book you can go on for hundreds of pages. If you're writing a movie script, if you're screenwriting, you got to reduce and condense all of that to, no more than 2 hours. Probably most movies run closer to 90 minutes. That's a tough thing to do many times.
Yeah, like that's what I did with The Woman in the Yellow Dress, because originally it was a screenplay. And when I decided to write a book, I looked through my scripts, and I've always loved the Maltese Falcon and, you know, the old Humphrey Bogart black and white movies. So I wrote The Woman in the Yellow Dress. I thought, this will make a good novel. But when I started writing the novel, the screenplay was done by about page 95. So I thought, well, I think I got to continue the story here a little more, and that's why it became a trilogy.
So what was the inspiration for this book? Let's talk a little bit about The Woman in the Yellow Dress. Where'd you get the idea?
Well, my wife, we used to date back in high school. And I went to California, and she went to Pennsylvania. And 40 years later, we got back together again. And the first day I saw her, she was wearing this yellow dress, and she just looked gorgeous.
Wow.
And I said to myself, you know what? That's the next title of my next screenplay, The Woman in the Yellow Dress. But, of course, in the actual storyline, my wife is not the woman in the yellow dress. She is not Rachel Stone Barbieri by any means. As beautiful, yes, but not as far as temperament goes.
And little did you dream that she would be your wife when you saw that woman in the yellow dress, eh?
Absolutely. Never knew, and I'm so happy that she came out to California and that we got back together. It's been wonderful ever since.
Well, I'm a great lover of mystery and crime novels. That's kind of my recreational reading. Tell us a little bit about where this novel is set. You're out on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, it starts in 1948, Los Angeles. It's right after the war. Patrick Miles Atwater, the private eye, used to be a cop, and then he was a Marine in the service, and he got back and starting over again, just like the countries after the war were all starting over again. But also were the bad guys starting over. They were reorganizing. And Patrick always looks at something that's wrong and wants to do the right thing by it and by the people that he works with. And he's at his office, which is a nice little bar off of the Malibu coast, and a very rich, beautiful woman named Rachel Stone Barbieri comes into him and gives him his card, said, somebody recommended you to me. my husband is cheating on me. And, of course, he looks at her. She's gorgeous. And he says, okay, I'll take your case. I'll look into it for you. But he knows full well there's something else going on with this woman, but he has to find out what it is. And when he finds out what it is, that kind of takes the story to the three books that I'm now writing.
Oh, sounds like it's right up my alley. I can see Bogey. I can see Jimmy Cagney. I can
definitely
see Fred McMurray in Double Indemnity, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Some of those great flicks from years gone by. Listeners, we have a few more minutes to talk with Robert Forte, but we need to take a quick break here so we don't run out of time. We'll do that, and we'll be back to pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR in just a moment. Sometimes it can be a real bag when you need to mail a package, right? You know what you're going to mail, but you're scrambling to find the right box or one of those padded envelopes or maybe the peanuts or the bubble wrap to, you know, make sure that a delicate item doesn't get broken during shipping. It is a hassle. There's no question about it. Let me tell you how you can make that job a whole lot easier. Just visit Goin' Postal, your friendly neighborhood shipping center here in Butler. Goin' Postal. They're located on Shockey Lane. That's right off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant. You just drive in there into the Shockey Mini Storage and follow the signs, and you're at Goin' Postal. So what do? Well, it's very simple. They package your items for shipping, and they take care of all that hassle that you have to go through. And you can send it any way you want to, by the way. FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service, your choice. It's fast, it's convenient, and it's moderately priced, too. I've utilized their services myself. In addition, they've got copying service, scanning available, faxing. You can even rent a temporary mailbox there. Oh, yeah, and there's an official notary, too, if you need to get something notarized before it's shipped out. Goin' Postal, Butler. Phone 724-841-0044. For more information, 724-841-0044. 140 Shockey Lane is the address, just off Newcastle Road, behind King's and Villa Grande, in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. Goin' Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Dr. Catherine Szabo, practicing family medicine at Butler Health System.
Health really is a family matter. That's why I'm in family medicine. It's for families like Jessica's. As a working mom, she has a lot to juggle. So if something comes up, she knows I'm on top of the whole story. And if they need specialty care, I know the best is right nearby.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Welcome back. Dave Malarkey is my name, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with a screenwriter, now a novelist, who lives in the Johnstown area here in western Pennsylvania now after spending many years out in California. His name is Robert Forte, and he's just published a novel entitled The Woman in the Yellow Dress. So we know why you called it The Woman in the Yellow Dress. Why did you decide to set it in the 1940s, Robert Forte?
Well, I wanted people to learn a little bit about what life was like back in the day and the attitudes of people about certain things. And when you really look at that, it really shows what's going on today in today's world. It hasn't changed much. But the decisions that were made back in the late 40s, early 50s, is really what gives us the world that we have today. And my main character, Rachel Stone Barbieri, is one of those women who's kind of responsible for what we have today in the underworld world.
I love the picture on the cover of the woman in the yellow dress, a woman who is very much from the 1940s. You can tell from the hairstyle, right? They were very distinctive back then, right after the war.
Absolutely. Everybody dressed to the nines all the time. It was wonderful. Men in suits and women in their best.
You said this started out as a screenplay. Has, in fact, it ever been produced, or do you hope for that at some time in the future?
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, since the two books are out now, you know, The Woman in the Yellow Dress and Magenta Dairy, that conversation is starting to occur. So So we're going to see what's going to happen in the next, say, 6 or 7 months from now.
So I know it's difficult because actors, especially big-time ones, are all tied up sometimes years in advance for parts. So who would be your dream actor to play Detective Patrick Atwater?
Well, if we were going to film it tomorrow, I would call Christian Bale and see if he wasn't busy.
Ah, okay. And what about Rachel Barbieri?
Oh, Rachel, that's a tough one. I personally, I'd like to find a woman who just is her, but maybe has never done a movie before, just a great actress and a beautiful woman.
That would work. I was thinking of Cate Blanchett.
She could do it.
She could do anything.
Why don't you give her a call, Dave, and then have her give me, you know, get back to me.
In terms of how does this work, do you wait for a call, or do you sometimes call yourself? For example, if there's an author of a book that you're thinking, hey, that would make a great movie, can you initiate the call, or do you have to wait for them to call you?
It's kind of like a double-edged sword, Dave, because I always looked at, you know, I used to make 50,000 calls all the time. I used to go into production companies. I remember being at Kennedy Marshall one day, and I was pitching Mabel Normand, a screenplay I have that is now optioned also. And they said, gee, Robert, we love this. This is great. Give us a call in about 8 years. You know, and I was like, oh, let me write that down on my calendar. So what I did was create my own production company, and, you know, that's Fifth Wind Films, and we're ready to make any movie tomorrow, but, you know, you still have to get it all put together, and you need that big check, Dave. That's the main thing.
After spending years out in Southern California and in Hollywood land, are you happy to be back, to be in Pennsylvania? I mean, it's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different culture. You know, we hear all the horrible Harvey Weinstein stories and all that stuff. Hopefully not in Johnstown, Robert.
No, I just love the small town feel. I really love Johnstown. I think it's a great little town. And I'd love to see it grow. And if we could get a bunch of Hollywood people to come out here to make some productions, I would be more than happy to assist and be a part of that. That would be wonderful.
Well, you've had some...
I don't miss California at all. The traffic and the cost of everything out there has just gone off the rails.
Now, you say there's going to be a third book in the trilogy. Is that titled yet, or are you not able to announce that?
No, it's called War of Ghosts. Don't have a cover yet that we're really happy and, content with, but we're working on it. I'm up to about chapter 6 right now as we speak.
How do you write? Do you write every day? Set aside, you know, a half an hour or an hour or something to write every day, or do you write when the mood strikes?
I write every day, Monday through Friday, from about 10:30 to about 3 o'clock.
It takes that discipline, doesn't it, Robert?
Oh, I just love doing it, and, you know, it just comes easy to me. I don't know what it is. I've never had writer's block. I just sit down, and it kind of just talks to me and tells me what to do, and I put it on the page.
Did you enjoy the old movies, or do you still, on Turner Classic Movies maybe, the old Bogart and Jimmy Cagney films?
Absolutely. Love them all.
My favorite channel. That's usually the first thing I check when I turn on the TV, see what's on Turner Classic Movies.
Yep. I do the same thing, Dave.
Yeah. Chatting with Robert Forte, listeners, long career as a screenwriter and a filmmaker now. With a debut novel. Actually, isn't it a little unusual to release two of them at the same time, Robert?
Well, we set out The Woman in the Yellow Dress just a couple months back, and I was just finishing Magenta Dairy, which is the follow-up book to The Woman in the Yellow Dress. So I thought, why not put it out there now, and then I'm going to write the third one, and eventually we'll have all three books available, The Woman in the Yellow Dress, Magenta Dairy, and War of Ghosts. And then I'll probably write a book a year until I'm very old and gray.
I have to ask you about the title of Magenta Dairy. I must confess the first couple of times I looked at it, I thought it was Magenta Diary.
No, I hear that all the time. When you read The Woman in the Yellow Dress, they talk to Hoover at one point, and he creates this code called Magenta Dairy, and it has something to do with the storyline in the first book. So you'll know what Magenta Dairy means when you get to the second.
Is it also set in the 40s, or is it later, Robert?
It's a few years later. It's 1951.
Well, listeners, if you like good crime mystery novels, and I do, you'll be interested in. Well, he's now Western Pennsylvania guy, Johnstown guy now, Robert Forte, with the woman in the yellow dress available. And Magenta Dairy, is that available yet, or will that be soon, Robert?
No, they're both available on Amazon.com or RobertForteBooks.com. You can get it as a book or a Kindle.
I know you're in the midst of a book tour and on a busy schedule. Appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes here today. It was nice to talk to you. Nice to meet you, Robert.
Dave, very nice to meet you, and thank you, too. I appreciate this very much.
If you're looking for Robert Forte online, it's F-O-R-T-E, Robert Forte. Nice to talk to you. So long now.
Okay, Dave. Take care.
Sure. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 south and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
Listeners, boy, today's lifestyle, I mean, does anybody have enough time to do what they want to do? We're going to talk about that in a specific way today on the next segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. If you're joining us a little bit late, our guest with us on the phone is Dr. Ken Redcross, a medical doctor, MD, and we're going to be talking about folks whose schedule is too busy to get regular exercise in during the week, and then they try to cram it in on Saturday and Sunday. First of all, Dr. Redcross, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's wonderful to be on with you today.
This situation of what I guess you could call weekend warriors in terms of exercise, this is more common, I guess, than we would realize across our country today, eh?
Oh, gosh, it's extremely common. In fact, you know, the research shows that 80% of us aren't getting the recommended amount of exercise that we actually should get, Dave. So it's important that we hone in on how much exercise should we be getting. In fact, experts say we are supposed to be getting 75 minutes a week of vigorous exercise or at least 150 minutes of moderate exercise. But, Dave, it isn't happening. And so you're right. People are realizing that they may be able to cram this exercise in throughout the weekend and make a big difference.
Now, first of all, we're going to talk about two things here. First of all, a recent study from the Journal of American Medical Association Internal Medicine says, okay, this irregular routine, if you try to do a lot on the weekends, can be beneficial. Not the ideal thing, but it can be beneficial. However, the second thing we want to mention is that you contend that we run a real risk of injury by trying to cram too much exercise into just 2 days over a Saturday and Sunday when we're mainly sedentary during the week.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave. Now, that study that you cited from JAMA, one of our medical journals, was a very important study. It's over 60,000 adults were actually in that study. And to your point, it showed that those who were weekend fitness enthusiasts versus those who exercise regularly like myself had the same mortality benefit. So that was key because we can all get off of the couch and say, you know, I think I have 2 days a week where I can at least get exercise. And to your second point, while this is good news that we can get the same mortality benefit, the thing that the study did not address was the potential for injuries when you're cramming this exercise into a couple of days a week. So That's why it was important to come on today to talk to all the listeners about some of the exercise do's and don'ts, especially if you're cramming it in over the weekend.
Well, let's, without any further ado, we'll proceed then. What are, and let's call this, I mean, it's like studying for a blue book whenever you're in school, cramming. You know, you would cram for a blue book. Here we're talking about cramming exercise into just 2 days. Generally, that would be Saturday and Sunday. What are some of the do's if that, in fact, has come to be our regular schedule?
Well, some of the do's are some of the no-brainers, I like to call them. Number one, you have to make sure we warm up. But the rookie mistake that a lot of us make, Dave, is that you have to make sure you understand the importance of cooling down as well.
Huh.
The warm-up makes sense because you're getting ready to go into this exercise. But the cool-down is so important to get the blood flow back to the muscles and to the ligaments and tendons so that you can also reduce injury. Now, not only that, when you're talking about cramming this exercise into 2 days, the second thing is you don't have time for muscle aches because you need to jump on those immediately, especially if you're exercising the next day. And one of the things I mentioned to patients is a good first-line defense. It's a homeopathic cream or gel, and it is called Arnicare. Now, the reason why I mention Arnicare in particular is that it's made from Arnica Montana, which is called the Mountain Daisy. And you'll learn as we talk more, Dave. I love things that feel like they're closer to the earth. And the good thing with Arnicare is that it helped with pain and swelling and bruising. And more importantly, it didn't have that menthol smell, which kind of turns a lot of people off from some of the over-the-counter creams as far as when they're exercising a little more. And last but not least, another important do. We have to make sure we hydrate, but we also should think about restorative foods, Dave, because I always say that food matters. One of the things I love post-workout are actually blueberries. Blueberries have been shown to actually help to decrease our muscle soreness, and they're wonderful for the carb content that you get after your workout as well. But not just blueberries, we also should think about eggs. Eggs have all of the essential amino acids and are a great post-workout restorative food as well. I also love to mention salmon. Salmon we know is good for so many reasons, especially that omega-3. But omega-3 has been shown to speed up muscle recovery and increase blood flow to those muscles like we were talking about before with the cool down. So these are some simple do's that can make a huge difference in our workout to hopefully decrease our risk of injury.
I'm trying to think back. By the way, listeners, Dr. Ken Redcross is the founder of Redcross Concierge, a personalized medical practice designed to provide convenient access to healthcare services. Is this something new? I've not heard of this before, concierge service for medicine.
You know what, Dave? It's becoming a newer trend. It's interesting. I started back in 07 when I was out in California because I felt that the patient bond was kind of leaving, which is so important for us to, I think, optimal health. So I started to say, is what if I gave patients 24/7 access to me and I'd make house calls and that sort of thing like medicine used to be? How would that impact healthcare? And I've been fortunate and blessed enough that patients are happy, and I'm happy, too, because I can actually sit there and spend my time with them and run my mouth. So it works for both of us.
I was trying to remember back when you were talking about muscle soreness to an old health class I had. I don't know whether it was in high school or undergraduate school, but I remember the term lactic acid, and that was
right.
Believed to be the cause of muscle soreness if you hadn't ridden a bicycle for a while and you rode a bicycle on a Saturday afternoon, your muscles would hurt the next day because of a buildup of lactic acid. Is that still the prevailing theory or is that out the window nowadays?
No, that's true. Lactic acid is a byproduct after we exercise, and so that lactic acid is what we feel when we feel that burn. Now, when you have that lactic acid and you get that burn, the thing I enjoy, the only thing that I think is good about lactic acid, Dave, is that you realize that I am finally exercising. In other words, I am pushing myself and pushing my muscles to make sure that they grow and that they become healthy. So lactic acid is a normal byproduct, and that's why we mentioned some of these restorative foods, which can help that muscle soreness that you get with the lactic acid post-exercise.
Okay, before our time runs out here, and it's going by very quickly, I want to talk about some of, if you're cramming exercise into the weekend, as we were talking earlier, okay, that can be a good thing if that's the best you can do, but there are do's and don'ts. And Dr. Redcross, what are some of the don'ts if you're cramming exercise into the weekend?
Absolutely. So the don'ts are do not plan back-to-back sessions. Rome was not built in a day. So you want to make sure you adjust your intensity for the first day, maybe a little less intensity the next day. Second thing you want to do is you want to make sure you do not obsess over one activity. Mix it up a little bit. The study showed that if you were doing the same exercise over and over again, you were at increased risk for injury. So I even talk about throwing in a jump rope even, something different that works different muscle groups. Last but not least, that important exercise cram don't is leave your ego at the door. If you know, Dave, that you only lift 100 pounds, this is not the day to go challenge yourself to lift 200 because you only have 2 days to work out. You want to make sure that you leave the ego at the door and be smart as you're exercising as well.
I think I have time to ask you one question that's always mystified me. What's the difference between a sprain and a strain, or are they the same thing?
No, they're two different things. Keep in mind, when you sprain your ankle, for instance, you have a ligament that goes from bone to bone. When you strain something like a muscle is attached to bone by a tendon, and so they're different. And because tendons have the muscle with them, you tend to get more blood flow. So they tend to actually heal a little bit quicker than sprains do, which are only just have the connection between the two bones and the vascular. In other words, the blood flow is not the same. So they're quite different. But sprains are a little bit more involved than strains, which actually heal a little bit quicker most times.
Do you have a website, Dr. Red Cross, where our listeners can find out more about you and your info?
Absolutely. So my website is drredcross.com. That's drredcross.com. Facebook is Ken Red Cross, MD, and Twitter is at Dr. Red Cross.
Dr. Ken Red Cross, MD, our guest. Thanks, doctor. Nice to talk with you today. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
And you.
Bye-bye.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, we've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and was recently honored to be named 2017 Family Business of the Year by the Pittsburgh Business Times. Check it out online at huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Across our network, Hunter will provide solutions for all your trucking needs.
Our hands and wrists are in motion nearly every minute of every day. So when you develop pain, everyday tasks become a problem. And although the causes of pain may vary, the orthopedic hand and upper extremity surgeons at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat a wide array of conditions. To learn more about hand and upper extremity care, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Introducing MSC Cruise Lines, the newest upcoming cruise line with new ships and fabulous vacations. Call Connie's Travel for details at 724-256-5900. That's 724-256-5900.
Welcome, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. Dave Malarkey is my name. And our guest for this segment visits with us by telephone. He is Stephen Hupp, and we're going to be talking about child development today, specifically a book written by Stephen Hupp called Great Myths of Child Development. First of all, Stephen, hello. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'd love to talk about parenting.
By the way, listeners, a little bit about our guest. Stephen Hupp is a professor of clinical child and school psychology at Southern Illinois University. Dr. Hupp is also a licensed clinical psychologist and a consultant for the East St. Louis Head Start program, so he knows of what he will speak today. I was fascinated by your book, Stephen Hupp, especially the way you approached it by talking about myths, because there are so many things that a lot of people think they know about child development, and they are, in many cases, 100% wrong.
Well, yeah, and I'm a parent myself, too, and there were a lot of things I thought I knew about kids and their development, and as a parent, but also as somebody who studies this, it kind of gave me motivation to dig deeper into a few topics.
You cover a few topics. You cover a wide range of topics. What's the structure of your book? How do you approach this, Stephen Hupp?
Well, for the most part, we've got 50 different myths. We start off kind of with the beginnings of children, and then we work all the way up through issues common for parenting and some older kids, and we kind of tackle them one by one.
By the way, listeners, if you're looking for Stephen Hupp's book, his last name is H-U-P-P, double P. And again, the title of the book is Great Myths of Child Development. Well, let's talk about a couple of these that I marked. I found them particularly interesting. And obviously, listeners, there are many, many, many more of these in the book. But here's one, for example, and there are a lot of people who believe this. We're talking about the terrible twos, Stephen Hupp. Most this is a myth that most parents believe. Most toddlers go through a terrible twos stage. You say, well, yes, but they can also be terrible at other ages, too, when they're very young.
Yeah, I used to, when my son was one, I used to say he was advanced because he already entered the terrible twos phase. And I hear other people say their three-year-old or four-year-old is in the terrible twos. And just recently, Kanye West said he went through the terrible twos phase when he was 35 years old.
Huh. Well, it's one of those things that has a nice ring to it. You know, there's a lot of alliteration there, the terrible twos. And the vast majority of parents, over 80%, according to your book, gave very great importance to this. 83% believe this is a stage of childhood that occurs at a specific time, and you say that's just not true.
Right. We looked at research. You know, kids obviously can have behavior problems at 2 years old or some new challenging behaviors, but the same thing happens at one and three and four and even at 35.
Here's one that I've heard time and time again. I've even seen it dramatized in the media, in movies, and on TV. Within about 1 hour after birth, babies need to bond with their mothers so that attachment is stronger over time. Talk a little bit about that myth, Stephen.
Well, I've just been hearing more and more about this broader concept of attachment parenting, and this is one of the major components of attachment parenting, this idea that if mothers aren't able to bond with their babies right after birth, within an hour or so, then there's going to be lifelong damage to their relationship. And unfortunately, people who promote attachment parenting are doing this without really research supporting this idea that it's critically important to have this bonding within the first hour.
Is there more to attachment parenting than just this? I've heard that term as well, but I really don't have a definition for it.
Yeah, it's a broad approach. It's got a lot of different keys. So another example is that it encourages bed sharing with a baby and to promote attachment. Another component that we tackle in the book is this idea of extended breastfeeding. And so although breastfeeding is a good thing to do whenever possible, they're encouraging it for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, even some people 7 years. And that's where we start to think this is starting to sound like parenting poppycock.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there was, I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head, I think it was on the cover of Time magazine about
right.
two or three years
yeah.
ago, a startling picture of breastfeeding at an advanced age. And most people, it was, I don't know, it was just kind of the, you know, right away the reaction was, oh my gosh, you know, something wrong there.
Yeah, and the title on that cover, it said, Are You Mom Enough?
Yes,
which is
yes.
this idea that attachment parenting is the best way to parent. And that was just with like a 3 or 4 year old on the cover. Mm-hmm. And that's actually younger compared to some of the ages that they've encouraged.
Now, you mentioned one other myth, and that had to do with bed sharing.
Right.
A lot of parents believe that that's important to bonding. You say, in fact, not only is that true, but studies have shown that bed sharing has been associated with serious harm.
Yeah, this is where I get into trouble. Sometimes parents think I'm trying to make them feel guilty if they've done this in the past, and if they have done it in the past and it didn't cause any physical harm, then, you know, no foul. But people should realize that especially with babies, this can put them at risk of being suffocated. The parent can roll over on them and not realize it when they're sleeping. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics, in the early months, does recommend sharing a room with a newborn, but not sharing a bed.
Yes, and we've had stories of those tragedies happening here in our area, unfortunately. And it's one of those things that parents never dream about, and then, wow.
Yeah, and then at the same time, we've got celebrities like Kourtney Kardashian on her video blog giving advice to parents about how they can co-sleep with their babies. And it's just unfortunate that celebrities sometimes take up the mantle of trying to give parents advice.
Now that you mention that, Stephen Huff, and listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, our guest is Stephen Huff. That's H-U-P-P, Stephen Huff. He's the co-author of Great Myths of Child Development. Now that you mentioned one of the Kardashians, I want to point out that your book is geared toward the layperson, the parents, mothers and fathers, and you. This is not a Dr. Spock book. I don't mean to knock a guy who's way, way back there, but you have a lot of references and examples to current culture. I mean, even to current TV shows like, you know, Modern Family and Mad Men in your book.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably because one of my weaknesses is I just love to watch TV, and I love pop culture, and the same can be said for my co-author, Dr. Jeremy Jewell, and so a lot of those references are TV shows that we like to watch. You mentioned Modern Family, and then otherwise, sometimes in our classes, we'd bring up a topic, and then students would share pop culture references with us, so we were even able to work a Sex and the City movie in there as a pop culture reference, and so, and Duck Dynasty, and we had a lot of fun ones.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that people realize that this is a modern approach, not to knock some of the past research and past guidelines, but this isn't a reprint of a book from 50 years ago.
No, and we do talk about people like Dr. Spock and previous ideas, but we try to focus it on how it applies to today's parent.
We're talking with Stephen Huff. His book is Great Myths of Child Development. You had one in here, and I'm searching because I marked this, Stephen, because it really threw me for a loop. Oh, here it is. And it's kind of a science-y thing, but it has to do with the sex chromosomes. And the myth is the sex chromosomes of all girls are XX and all boys are XY. Now, I thought that's what I remembered from my my AP biology class, and you say that 80% of all parents believe those are the only possibilities, but there are other possibilities? Enlighten me on that. I never heard of that one.
Well, and this is the fun part of working on this book, is you get to learn all kinds of new things, and that's what I learned in biology class, too. And the thing is, a lot of what we learn in biology class is the kind of typical course of development. And so it's true that most girls are going to have two X chromosomes, and most boys are going to have one X and one Y. But as we discuss in the book, there's so many other possibilities. So there's rare situations where there can be a boy with two X chromosomes, or there can actually be a girl who has an X and a Y chromosome, or some people have three sex chromosomes, and there's actually a whole bunch of other possibilities.
Well, again, listeners, this is fascinating stuff. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat about this with Stephen Huff. We need to take a quick break. We'll do that, and we'll pick up our conversation here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Spring is just around the corner. Well, actually, it's officially here. We're talking about springtime and warm weather season just around the corner. Need some new tennis shoes, new athletic shoes for the coming spring and summer? I'll tell you the place to go, Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. They have all your famous name brand athletic shoes, Nike and New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Pro-Pet, and more, all under one roof. Don't have to go to two or three different places. Miller's Shoes, downtown Butler. They also have Rockport Shoes, a well-known brand. These are shoes that last. Timberland, waterproof boots, select group of men's shoes, and many, many pairs of famous name brand ladies' shoes, too, on rack, sale price. And don't forget that Miller's is your local headquarters for SAS Comfort Shoes. They're made in America. Not many shoes are anymore. And these are really, really comfy. And they come in a variety of colors and styles for men and women. Even sandals, yes, SAS sandals. For the summertime, and they're just as comfortable as the SAS Comfort Shoes. Find them at Miller's, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, where generations Folks from around here have shopped for shoes for everybody in the family. Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 2323. The pick three is 009. The pick four is 5590. The pick five, 58862. The wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt is 4, 18, 24, 28, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Welcome back, listeners, joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone today. He is Stephen Hupp, and we're talking about his book, Great Myths of Child Development. Let's talk about twins. You have, as I thumbed through your book, Stephen, you have a lot of myths and a lot of information about twins in here, including, and I've heard this for many, many years, that if, you know, we've heard stories of twins who are separated sometimes by, you know, thousands of miles, and one twin is in, you know, a serious auto accident and the other twin feels pain. Have you heard these stories?
Well, yeah, we kind of go through several of those stories, and there's a good Cheech and Chong movie called The Corsican Brothers, where one of the Cheech and Chong, they don't look identical, but one of them gets hurt and the other one feels the pain. And so I was surprised. The surprising thing to me was that people have actually researched this with identical twins. They'll put one twin in one room and get the twin in the other room and do something startling to the first twin, or have them watch a scary movie or pop a balloon behind their head and see if there's any type of physiological reaction to the other twin in the other room. When you look at all the research that's been done, as much as people wanted to find a connection, they really could not find any type of connection like that.
And you could find no research that indicates that identical twins have some sort of a telepathic connection that originates in the womb?
Nope, could not find any research like that. Now, of course, twins can be close, and maybe in some cases closer than other siblings. They share the same genes and grow up together, but it's not a telepathic connection.
Obviously, identical twins look alike, you know, physically, if you look at two of them side by side. Do they, in fact, have identical genes?
This is one of the ones we added late as we kind of new research came out, and we learned, or I learned, that identical twins actually don't have identical genes. They've got very, 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 very similar genes, almost the same genes, but because of the way cells replicate themselves early in the process, the developing embryo, the cells start having little tiny mutations here and there. And so even identical twins have some small differences in their genes. So it's better to call them identical-ish.
There are more myths and more information about twins in here, but much more as well, listeners. I've heard stories about mothers-to-be, pregnant women who will listen to Mozart or watch, you know, very, very highly intelligent and complicated DVDs. Does this help to help a developing Einstein in the womb, Stephen?
Well, and when my kids were littler, when they were little babies, we had those little baby Einstein videos that we'd pop in the DVD player, or maybe in a car ride, and we didn't really do it with the idea of trying to promote their intelligence, but a lot of people do, and they do get marketed as educational products without research to show that they are really promoting a baby's intelligence or educational in some way.
More babies are born during a full moon. True or false?
Well, they've researched this, and actually one of the biggest studies in the whole book, it had like 500,000 participants in it, and looked at different dates of when babies are born, and were they more likely to be born when there's a full moon, because of this idea that the moon has the gravitational pull on the embryonic fluid. And actually, no, it's false. Babies are no more likely to be born on a full moon.
Joining us a little bit late, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We're chatting with Stephen Hupp, about his book, Great Myths of Child Development. I'm going to speed on here through some of the older ages that you discuss myths. Here's one that we hear a lot about, Stephen, bedwetting. You talk about this in your book. Is this a sign of serious problems, or is it just something?
So it's pretty clear that bedwetting is a physiological condition, something that occurs biologically, and it's not a psychological issue. We do have a good treatment for it called the urine alarm that can cue the person when they have started to wet the bed, and then it starts to condition their body to wake up sooner. And so I like to use that just to say, not only do we spend a lot of time debunking myths, but we try to give parents some research-supported resources for helping them deal with some of the issues we talk about in the book.
A lot of parents are worried about this, you know. Does this mean problems later in life or whatever? What about imaginary friends? Is that a sign of social emotional problems in children? I hope not, because I had imaginary friends when I was very young.
Well, if you watch a movie like The Shining or Sixth Sense, it is a really bad sign when kids start talking to people who aren't there. But when you look at research in the real world, about 65% or at least 50%, about half of kids do have imaginary friends. And just the fact that half of kids have imaginary friends is probably some good evidence that it's not a sign of problems. And in fact, there's actually some research that might have some good positive signs in terms of kids with imaginary friends tend to be a little bit more social.
Huh. Oh, boy, I feel relieved now.
So all this lifelong worry about your imaginary friend, you can now talk freely.
I actually don't remember them, but my mom told me about it. We're discussing great myths of child development. What about when we get to kids who are even older? I mean, you talk about things like... a divorce, for example. A lot of people think that divorce ruins most kids' lives. True or false, Stephen?
Well, it's false. Divorce obviously can be tough on kids, a hard thing for kids to have to go through. But when we, and especially for the first couple years after the divorce, research shows it's a difficult adjustment period for a lot of families. But research shows that even when kids have gone through a divorce, most of the kids, or there's only just a slight increase of them having bigger problems after that. And so most kids who go through divorce can really be just fine with it. It's the bigger issue is how you handle the divorce and doing important things like making sure you're not putting the kids in the middle.
I just saw a story about this in a magazine a couple of weeks ago, Birth Order. In fact, there have been many books written about this. Anything to this deal about birth order? Is that a predictor of a child's personality in any way?
Well, the focus we have on the book is that there is some small areas where it can have a little difference, but it really gets blown out of proportion, and it's really not a very powerful predictor of who we are.
Some of the things that you talk about in the book, as our time begins to run short here, are not emotional concerns, but physical. And for example, a baby walker. Now, I had heard this. I was aware of the dangers of this, but I did not realize that they've been banned in a lot of places.
Yeah, that was something we learned, too. Baby walkers, the little wheeled devices we put 1-year-olds in or 6-month-olds in and let them start walking around the room. And a lot of people think that those baby walkers actually give their babies a chance to walk and help them walk sooner. And we found some research, well-designed research, that compared babies in a baby walker compared to babies who weren't in a baby walker. And those in the baby walker actually walked a couple weeks more slowly, if anything.
Huh.
And so, one, it doesn't help babies walk any sooner. And then that was one thing I learned while writing that myth, is that baby walkers are banned in Canada because of the safety concerns. They were particularly more dangerous in the 90s. I think they make them safer now, but there's still some dangers associated with them. And so it's even led to a baby walker black market in Canada, which I thought was fascinating.
I have to ask you about one more thing, baby talk. I got to be honest with you, Stephen Hupp. I cringe sometimes when I hear mothers or even aunts and cousins using baby talk. Is there any danger in that, or is it actually a good thing, the baby talk? What's the deal on that?
Well, if you're using baby talk with your high schooler and their friends see, I could imagine there's a little danger there. If you're not using baby talk with a baby, it almost looks a little strange just to try to have a conversation with a one-year-old the same way you might with any other adult.